Today's episode of Expanded Perspectives is sponsored by Gaia.com. If y'all are like us, you've exhausted everywhere else you find your documentaries on the strange and unusual and the fun. And if you like grand conspiracies and more breakaway societies, paranormal, ancient civilizations like we all do, and UFOs, well, we've found the place right at your fingertips, folks. You can stream videos from anywhere, from your living room or on the go, with access to over 7,000 titles, all on Gaia.com, G-A-I-A. Now, you can get this for a monthly plan of $9.95 a month. Your first month will only be 99 cents. Now, there is a three-month plan and an annual plan. So, if you're into the things that we're into, and judging by what you're listening to, you are, start enjoying Gaia.com. Expand your perspective even more. G-A-I-A.com.
And this episode is made possible by our proud sponsor, Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country, and it's their mission to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Now, I got my Blue Apron delivered to me this weekend. If you were following me on Instagram and Facebook, you saw the photos. And the box that I had delivered to me was pimento cheeseburgers. And I'm a big fan of cheeseburgers. I'm a big fan of pimento cheese, but I've never had the two combined together. And I've seen them on menus and stuff. But it was shipped to me, and we made it, me and Delee did, and it was delicious. Now, I want to emphasize, when I say fresh, I mean it was fresh. It came. I wasn't real sure how it would be. It comes packaged in this special lined box. It's got these ice packs in it, and it had all the vegetables there. It had carrots. It had parsnips. And, of course, it had a thing, a block of cheese that I had to grate and create, and I made my own pimento cheese. It came with the potato buns, the ground beef, everything. And we made the meal, and it was delicious. Now, the reason that Blue Apron's able to create these fantastic tasting meals, I think, is because of how fresh their produce is, and their beef and chicken and pork, they all come from responsibly raised animals, and the produce is sourced from farms that practice regenerative farming. So if you're not familiar with regenerative farming is, that's they rotate the crop so that the soil doesn't get overused. And even if there are soil that's unplenished, they replenish the soil. So it's a way you're supposed to do it. And that's what makes it taste so good. They've partnered with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. And as a result, their seafood is sourced sustainably under standards developed in partnership with the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch, and amongst other things. It's affordable. For less than $10 a person per meal, they deliver you seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. I liked mine so much that I'm going to save the card. You can do the same thing, too, so mm-hmm. We can recreate it again. Variety. There's a variety of recipes you can pick each week by going to their website, and they don't repeat these ever again during the year, so if you'll never get bored. Cam, tell them, what are some upcoming meals that have been featured this month?
Ooh, I got you some good ones. Udon noodle soup with miso and soft-boiled eggs. This is one. Tempura fried cod with Thai-style vegetable salad and jasmine rice. Now, that's two of them that just come off of the two-person plan, folks. If you like the four-person plan, make sure you check out the seared steaks and mashed potatoes with roasted Brussels sprouts and steak sauce. Or this is going to be one that I'm going to have to try. Creamy spinach and potato baked eggs with garlic bread.
Wow.
That sounds awesome.
The one we got delivered this weekend that I'm going to give you in just a few minutes, it's over here stored in the refrigerator, is the cashew chicken stir fry with tango mandarins and jasmine rice. I want you to take some pictures of you preparing it and you enjoying it.
It's going down.
Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card, and it's really fun to do. Jacob was excited. He didn't get a chance to make it with me this time, but the next time I promised that he could help me make it. That's blueapron.com. Check out this week's menu to get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/expanded. You'll love how it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/expanded. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Cam, you ready to get the show started?
Let's do this. everybody out there, all you troublemakers, and thanks again for joining Kyle and I here on Expanded Perspectives. That's right. We're here again. It's me, Cam. Kyle's sitting across the table from me. He's rubbing his eyes, folks, because it's not allergies. It's what I was giving him a hard time. He's laughing now. We say, man, we got some bad allergies. Kyle got some bad news, folks. He might be going blind.
Not really. No, it's just my eyes, I guess, are getting worse.
You're old, man. You're mad old.
I thought my eyes have been bothering me the last couple of weeks because of allergies, but it turns out it's probably because my prescription needs to be changed. It needs to be updated. So I went to the optometrist this last week, and it turns out that, my eyes are worse. I need a new prescription. And in addition to that, I'm also colorblind now.
Join the club. You're welcome.
I didn't even know I was.
I never knew you were racist. Now you're colorblind. That's awesome.
Yeah, right? So I should never have gone in there. That's why I don't like to go to the doctor. When you go in there, they always tell you bad news. I'd have been much better off just carrying on, thinking it was allergies, but no.
Kyle used to always talk about he never went to the doctor because it's like taking your car to the mechanic. Even if it's brand new, they're going to find a problem.
Oh, yeah, they'll find something. They'll be like, oh, yeah, man, this O2 sensor's that. Yeah, no, it's not. You know how many times, you don't change that, you're going to have some problems. 400,000 miles later, thanks, sir. So anyways, yeah, I had to get new glasses. And
it's not allergies. It's because you've been sitting here humped over in front of this computer, scouring the web and reading books.
Well, he told me that I need to wear them more often. That's one of the problems. I typically wear my sunglasses during the day, mm-hmm, when I'm driving around, and then I do wear my glasses when I'm at work working on the computer. But I am bad about at night when I'm done with my work. I take my glasses off. I watch TV. I watch the hockey games. Whatever. I'm not wearing those glasses. And he says I really need to be wearing them more often. I'm putting too much of a strain on them. And if I want it to keep getting worse,
Keep doing what you're doing.
Keep doing what I'm doing. So.
Man, that ain't cool. But I got something that is cool.
Okay.
It's going to help you out. It's going to help you get over your failing eyesight, sir.
Okay.
Because I know you like cold, frosty adult beverages.
I do.
This comes from Futurity.org. Folks, Kyle and I discussed this. This has been a while back. This is about an ancient Chinese recipe that makes lumpy, tasty beer, folks. Now, you remember I covered this a while back about a recipe, a 5,000-year-old recipe that was found off the residue inside some pottery vessels in northeast China, right?
Yeah, I remember that. Mm-hmm.
And they said that it was the earliest evidence of beer production in China so far. Well, Li Lu is a professor in Chinese archaeology at Stanford University and the co-author of the study on the beer recipe that was published in, and I just saw this on your nightstand, Kyle, Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. I saw you got your new piece in here. Yeah, so yeah. Apparently in that one afternoon, all the archaeology students, or a small group of them, I guess, that was really into this kind of thing, showed up at the Stanford Archaeology Center. And Lou says this, archaeology is not just about reading books and analyzing artifacts. Trying to imitate ancient behavior and make things with the ancient method helps students really put themselves into the past and understand why people did what they did. And I can't agree more. I believe 100% you kind of have to put yourself in their position to see what life would be like. So they decided to make the beer. They took and followed the recipe. Now, the interesting thing about this recipe was it says that it's made mainly with cereal grains, millet, barley, as well as Job's tears, which is a type of grass there from Asia. And it has traces of yam and lily roots also appeared in this. But Lou says that she was particularly surprised to find barley. It's the earliest evidence to date of barley seeds in China, which date 4,000 years ago. Hmm. And it suggests why barley, which is the first domesticated in Western Asia, spread to China. They believe that's it. And this is what she says. Our results suggest that the purpose of barley's introduction in China could have been related to making alcohol rather than a staple of food. So it's like what we've talked about. Lots of times when the water's not safe, they would cook the beer, but the beer would be safe. They didn't really realize, I don't think, when they probably first started doing it, that it was the boiling of the water or the boiling of this concoction that led to it being clear. And they just thought maybe it was the adding of these grains did it, when it was actually the boiling thing. So anyway, what they did is at the end of the class, each of the students that were in that small group tried to imitate the Chinese beer recipe with what they did. Covered it, did the whole thing, cooked it, pretty much did the whole deal. Put it in containers, let it room temperature, let it ferment for about a week, the whole deal. Now, they did say this. Madeline Ota is an undergraduate student there in Lou's course, and she says that she knew nothing about the process of beer making before she even took the class. So like most people, they don't even know.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, I have no idea how it's really made. So as they get into this whole thing, they make it, what's interesting is they even talk about, not only did it taste good, they said it is kind of lumpy, it's kind of thick, it tasted very good. They said that they believe the ancient Chinese even used straws to drink the beer because they don't filter this beer. It's all poured up, it's all cooked, it's all, and when it's done, you just drink it straight out of the jug, it's all mixed in.
Yeah, I couldn't do the straw thing. I don't use straws. Even with like sodas and stuff, I hate straws.
No, yeah,
I like to pour my drink.
Well, I don't hardly ever use them, but every now and again, I don't want to get my big mustache all off in my tea glass all the time.
I could see
so
that.
It depends on that. But I thought it was really interesting that they said that straw usage, because I was like, look, I'm an idiot. What do I know about straws? I was like, straws hadn't been around, but maybe, I don't know, 40, 50 years? What? How long straws been around? No, ancient Chinese were using straws.
Oh, yeah, man. What do you think they developed the blowgun?
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. If somebody's like, well, I killed a guy with this blowgun, I'm going to put it in my drink now. So anyway, that's it. But I thought it was cool that they actually did go back, use the recipe. So we followed up on what we had talked about is they actually went back, made it. And apparently it's very tasty.
That's very cool. I'll tell you something else that's cool is that Google is testing some of AI's killer instincts. That's right. We talk about it all the time on this show.
Not cool.
The robot uprising, the eventual robot uprising. Thank God I've got these buttons from Mellon Carnegie University to keep them off me. But Google recently has been doing tests to test how AI would react with... You know, the AI, I'm trying to think of a way to phrase this. We're creating these self-learning computers and these self-learning AI, this artificial intelligence, and they're trying to determine, because this is what everybody's worried about, the story is if you turn them on, then they're going to figure out relatively quickly that man is their enemy and then turn on us, you know, just like the Terminator movies. They're trying to figure out if AI really is going to do this before they actually just turn them loose.
Just cut them out. I got you.
These researchers is what's called DeepMind Lab. DeepMind Lab is a lab at Google. They've been working with two games to test whether these neural networks are more likely to understand motivations to compete or to cooperate. They hope that this research could lead AI to being better at working with each other and with humans than feeling like it's a competition. Now, in the first game, two AI agents, a red and a blue team, were tasked with gathering the most apples in a rudimentary two-dimensional graphical environment. Now, each agent had the option of tagging the other with a laser blast that would temporarily remove them from the game. The game was run thousands of times, and researchers found that red and blue were willing to gather apples when they were abundant. But as the apples became fewer and more scarce, the AI quickly learned that they could blast the other one with this laser blast and get ahead. Now, they did another test, and this other test...
So they basically, you're saying they taught it to be competing.
They didn't teach it.
It's learning.
It did it on its own.
So it's AI is instantly learning about competition.
That's what they're trying to play out these tests now. Before it actually comes out. You know what I'm saying? They're testing them.
Yes.
And in the test, all on its own, when there was plenty of apples around, it was fine. It was willing to just gather apples. But once it started noticing that the apples were becoming more scarce, they started shooting each other with these laser rays to get ahead. Now, then second test, which is a more optimistic game called Wolfpack, the agents were tasked to play wolves attempting to capture prey. Now, greater rewards were offered when the wolves were in close proximity during a successful capture. Now, this incentivized the agents to work together rather than heading off to the other side of the screen to pull a lone wolf attack against any prey. The large network was much quicker to understand that in this situation, cooperation was the optimal way to complete the task. So, at the end of the day, they still have a lot of testing to do. And they say that, although part of the test is alarming, the other part shows that the AI did seem to realize that working together, cooperation helped it. But what they're still afraid of is that they'll learn to cooperate to fight against humans.
Yeah. I don't like this. That's not what you want your robots to learn, is to get a leg up. You just got to go ahead and tase your neighbor over here.
Well, they're saying that let's just be glad that DeepMind, the team there at Google, is taking things very slowly and methodically, learning what does and what does not motivate artificial intelligence.
It is good to start doing that now.
Yeah, because this is, I don't think there's any way for us to stop it. These robots, this is coming.
But there may not be a way for us to stop this activity anyway.
Now.
Anyway,
like, maybe
how are you going to program that out of them? I mean, I don't think you can.
Well, this is what Elon Musk and these people are talking about, that we really shouldn't be creating these robots like this.
No.
This artificial intelligence. It's going to turn on us.
It's going to happen.
I think so. Terrifying.
Yeah. It's terrible. I'm not a big fan of that, but I tell you what I am a big fan of. A few weeks ago, I reported off of Kyle's and my favorite website, Cryptozoology News, about a giant bird sighting. Well, Brett, it's happened again.
Really? See, they've been seeing quite a bit lately.
But you're going to, I think you're going to really enjoy this one. This comes, they say it's a Thunderbird sighting in Maryland. Said a man in Maryland claims he and two other people saw an unknown bird that he believes to be a Thunderbird. Now, this happened back in 1972, this sighting. This fellow now is a 55-year-old press operator who wanted to stay anonymous, but he says that he was in the kitchen with his twin brother when they first noticed it. And this is what he says. I was getting something to eat. My brother lives next door and noticed the massive bird landing the tree. Then he told me and my mother to come look at it. So that's, he sees, he's like, hey, get over and check this out. The man reports that the black-feathered bird was reportedly perched on a 40-foot-tall tree and measured, this is what he says, about 5 feet from head to the toes, the talons that he calls it. Now, he also says this, that the weight of the bird had the branch bending a lot, and it had a beak that was close to an eagle's with the tip pointed down. He says when it took off from the perch, the amount of air it displaced was incredible as he was trying to get airborne, with tree limbs moving violently. He guesses that the wingspan tip to tip was around 12 feet, and he said that's a very conservative estimate. Now, of course, the newspaper press operator told Cryptozoology News that he was sure that it was absolutely not a turkey vulture, so not a buzzard. It's like, that's not what we saw. He says, I have no doubt it was a Thunderbird. He says this whole sighting took about 55 minutes. Of course, you know, this is back in one morning on 1972. He's like, so we didn't have cameras and video and all that stuff of it. It was just us seeing that. So it's one of those L's. You know, you and I talk about it. We always try to guess, you know, what could you misidentify that fork? What could you get the size and all that? If it was truly as close as he says it was, you would be able to tell something was that big. Like if you, there's something up on top of a utility pole right outside your house that's 5 foot tall, you'd be able to go, yeah, that's pretty big because up there, yeah, it's pretty good size.
Yeah.
You'd be able to know it wasn't just a little old buzzard. You're talking about something bigger than a transformer. If the utility pole had a transformer, something larger than that, that it's hanging off of. So you look along something like that. How come it couldn't be these large birds? Maybe they migrate. How often do you pay attention when you're driving or working around outside or whatnot at the birds flying by?
Never.
Exactly. It's a small percentile. So this could very easily be something out there that we just don't really pay attention to.
Yeah, just a large group of birds.
Yeah, I mean, just migrating and moving.
Large birds. Yeah. Not pterosaurs, not dinosaurs. Yeah. These are just ginormous winged feathered birds.
Maybe they're a throwback. Maybe it is a throwback species that we just have, we already know they exist, but we just don't think they still exist. We just don't have enough proof of them. Maybe they do come up from South America and migrate up into Canada. Or who knows? But it always makes me wonder when you see that. It's not like it, like you talked about a pterosaur or roping. We're not describing that. We're talking about it being a real bird.
Wow, that's incredible. Also, what's incredible is I know from time to time people love to hear me talk about black-eyed kids. Oh. You know, David Weatherly's written books on it and stuff. We've covered it many times. But there seems to be a new type of sighting. This is black-eyed adults. Have you heard about this?
No, and I don't want to.
Over on Dana and Greg Newkirk's weekandweird.com, they posted a recent story that someone submitted to them, and it's pretty interesting. And it goes like this. It says, at the time, back in 2012, me and my ex-boyfriend were living in Lee Woods, just outside Bristol, United Kingdom. We had many strange experiences in the 3 months we were staying in the woods. But this one takes the biscuit. We were leaving to go to work one day around 10:30 a.m. and went out onto the tow path at the bottom of the gorge. Right there were four people walking along. At first, a short middle-aged man with pointed gray beard and completely black eyes. The second, a very tall middle-aged woman with completely black eyes. And the third, a teenage boy, roughly 17 to 18, with completely black eyes and a troll-like underbite with what seemed to have fangs protruding upwards. And the fourth was a very beautiful black girl. The rest were extremely pale white. I guess her age was about 20 to 21 years old, and her eyes were normal. The strangeness, the path was flooded out. Some puddles on that towpath are up to a foot deep. And they weren't stepping in the puddles without even looking at the ground, which I promise is impossible in flood season, even when you're paying attention to what you're doing. Their skin didn't seem to fit them, and they moved in a very strange way, almost like their limbs were bending in places there are no joints. The two older ones looked at us, and we said, "Good morning." with his really unsettling smile. But the black-eyed adults said nothing back, which is really odd, as it's a very friendly city where strangers often talk to each other. They stared at us and it felt awful, like they were looking into my brain or something. The troll-like teenager looked dead ahead with a really angry expression on his face, and the girl looked happy but vacant, like she was hypnotized, just staring into space walking in front of him. Their clothes were modern, waterproof coats and walking boots. Apart from the girl who wasn't wearing walking boots like she'd intended to come to the woods, she was wearing flat pumps, which nobody in their right mind would wear on a path during the middle of flood season. When they had passed us, we looked at each other immediately and said at the same time, "That was so weird." We both felt the strangeness emanating off of them, like a total sense of foreboding. What adds further mystery to this encounter is that exactly 1 year later, my ex tragically died at age 22 in one of the quays of that same river the towpath follows. It was reported that he had hallucinated a girl called Sally, throwing herself in after speaking to her. He could have been saved, but he refused to let anyone rescue him until he had rescued Sally. There are a lot of residential boats on that quay, so a lot of people heard him shouting for her and tried to help him. The police looked in the quay for a second body for hours after he had died, but concluded that she had been a figment of his imagination, brought on by misadventures with drugs. I know this might sound far-fetched, but I have been trying to find out more about these BEKs ever since and wanted to share this experience in case it was helpful to anyone, in case you have any information that might be helpful to search for answers. So, you know, just like no one ever knows what's going to happen if you invite the black-eyed kids into your home, it seems that even talking to them can bring bad things. So I wonder if a year later or so, you know, we've talked about Puckwudgies and other entities that'll lure you into places. That kind of, he hallucinated and thought there was a girl drowning. He jumped in to save her, and he ended up drowning himself.
Yeah, there's probably a really good chance that could have been it.
So I don't know. Yeah. Pretty creepy.
Yeah.
After the break, we're going to get into a pretty interesting story about phantom phone calls. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Since the beginning of time, people have always felt the urge to speak with the dead. There's a strong desire to communicate with loved ones who have passed on to the other side. Whether it's a deceased grandparent, mother, father, sibling, or just a dear friend, humans seem to long for these unachievable conversations. Or are they? Throughout most of time, these back-and-forth dialogues were done through meditation, rituals, seances, spirit mediums, dreams, or even drug-induced states and spirit boards. But times have changed, and as technology becomes ever more advanced, so it seems, does the methods by which the deceased can reach out and speak to us. Even Thomas Edison was working on a device he called the spirit phone, which he claimed could be used to speak with the dead. It was never proven if it worked or not, but several others have come up with similar devices. Anyone familiar with ghost hunting, or at least familiar with any one of the numerous ghost hunting shows on television, is aware of EVPs, or electronic voice phenomenon, whereas a mysterious phantom voice, or voices, which are not heard at the time of the recording, show up later when they are played back. An extension of this is the modern phenomenon of ghost phone calls, literally getting a call, voicemail, or email message from the dead. After all, it makes perfect sense that in this age of phones, and nearly everyone possessing a smartphone or mobile device, it seems like it would be the perfect way for the spiritual realm to try and reach out to contact us. Phone calls from the dead are a curious occurrence. Most of these calls are made before the receiving party knows that the person has died. Many people who have received these calls say that the phone rings just as it would with any other call, except for one thing. The ring seems dead or just off somehow. Sometimes the connection seems to be bad, with large amounts of static, and the voices of others may be heard faintly in the background, as if lines had been crossed. These calls are sometimes placed person to person with the assistance of a strange phantom operator. Checks with the phone company will return no evidence of the call ever being placed. If the individual receiving the call is aware that the caller is in fact deceased, the caller sometimes makes a reference to a third party, an anonymous they, who have allowed the call to take place, and warn that there is little time to talk. Indeed, most of these calls, when the recipient knows that the caller is dead, the call is usually very brief, usually less than 5 minutes, most of the time less than 1 minute. It seems that it's not easy for the dead to make these calls, and this could account for the many reports of calls where the caller simply repeats the same phrase over and over. The call continues for a while and may be terminated in a few days. The dead caller's voice may just seem to get fainter and fainter throughout the call and eventually trails off into nothingness. The caller may terminate the call and the recipient will hear the click and then a dial tone, or the line may just abruptly go dead. There seem to be three main types of phone calls from the dead: when the caller is newly deceased, when the caller has been dead for some time, or when a living person makes a call and it's answered by a dead person. Most phone calls from the dead occur when the caller is newly deceased. They usually will call within 24 hours of their death. They may be calling to say a last goodbye or to instruct the living on a way to avoid impending danger or hardship. Some calls may indicate the wishes of the deceased in the respect to the last will, perhaps. These calls tend to be relatively brief, usually fulfilling their purpose and then ending. The more rare variety of phone calls from the dead are those that come from a person who has been dead for a good deal of time. This usually means a few months. The longest interval between a death and a phone call that has been reported is 2 years. These phone calls may come on an important date, such as the anniversary of the person's death, or sometimes their birthday, or possibly on Mother's or Father's Day. The majority of these anniversary calls seem to be just a reminder to the living. These anniversary calls tend to make up the majority of repeating calls, where the deceased simply repeats the same phrase over and over. Besides anniversary calls, these type of phone calls from the dead seem to be much longer. The correlation is that as long as the recipient does not know the person is dead, a phone call from the dead with a person who has been deceased for some time will be much longer than one in which the caller has just recently died. Some of these calls are reported to last for up to half an hour. On today's show, we'll look at some cases of ghosts that got with the times and allegedly make calls from beyond the grave. One interesting case in this phenomenon took place in the late 1990s to a woman while she was at work. The woman's name was Karen Jones. Karen had recently started a new job. It wasn't her favorite, but times were tough, and sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do to make ends meet and pay the bills. Anyway, she had been working at the new job, and one day, while a few of her coworkers were out to lunch, one of the other workers' phone began to ring. At first, she just ignored it and tried to carry on with work, but it rang again. Once again, she ignored it. Well, after about 10 minutes or so, it rang again. And this time she thought, maybe it's important. Maybe someone needs to get in touch with Mary. You see, Mary is the girl whose phone kept ringing. Unlike today, most people in the 90s still didn't have cell phones or mobile devices. So, Karen ran over to Mary's desk and picked up the phone. A man's voice on the other end asked for an unfamiliar name before correcting himself and asking for Mary.
Yeah, may I speak with Reed, please? Mary, please?
When Karen told him that Mary was out and that she could take a message, he allegedly said,
could you tell her that this is her brother? I really missed her at the family gathering, and I wish that she had come.
Karen said sure and hung up the phone. Later, when Mary returned, Karen kindly passed along the message, which provoked a shocked reaction in the woman, prompting her to run off and cry. Another coworker then explained to the perplexed Karen that Mary's brother had died in a car crash 5 years ago, and that she had not gone to a recent family reunion 2 weeks prior due to her husband's health problems. The coworker also related that the unfamiliar name was a nickname which only her brother called her. Ree, short for Mary. Another strange, well-circulated, and allegedly recorded case of a phantom call from the dead happened in 1994 when a paranormal researcher by the name of George Meek was contacted by his long-deceased colleague, Konstantin Rodiv. Meek and Rodiv had been eminent researchers of recording and researching electronic voice phenomenon, or EVP, in which disembodied voices of spirits are purportedly caught on audio tape. Together, the two men had made it their life work to attempt to investigate and prove the phenomena, and were claimed to have made several groundbreaking recordings, but the research was cut short with Rodiv's tragic death in 1974. Then, in 1994, Meek claims that he started being contacted by his long-dead colleague through calls, emails, and even fax. It seems oddly fitting that such a prominent researcher of electronic voice phenomenon should come back to successfully become part of the very phenomena that he had so steadfastly studied. Meek claimed that he successfully made recordings of these calls from Rodiv. Here it is now.
Morning, this is George Meek.
This is Konstantin Rodiv. George, my friend, at last we succeeded in contacting you. Jeanette is beside me, and she wants to give you all her love. This is Konstantin Rodiv. This is the first contact you get from us. I suppose that you can hear me.
I can hear you very well, very plainly.
Fine, so this is the beginning of a new story, a new chapter, George. You are a very good friend of ours, even if we haven't met. We will continue this. This is the first which we succeeded.
Thank you, dear friend. You may not be able to hear me, but I want to take this occasion to say...
In another account in 2003, a man from Lincolnshire named Frank Jones lost his wife Sadie to a heart attack and had her buried with her beloved cell phone, which she was known to always be playing with. Not long after his wife's death, Jones and his family began to receive inexplicable calls, as well as text messages, which had seemed to come from the deceased Sadie's phone. One night, while sitting in a chair at his favorite bookstore to read from a new book, Jones claimed to have gotten a call on his cell phone from his home phone number, which was odd considering that he knew that nobody was there at the time. When he got back home, he claims that he could smell a distinctive smell of cigarettes, which Sadie was fond of smoking, even though Jones himself was not a smoker. He also smelt a faint whiff of the perfume his wife had used to wear. Jones also claimed that he regularly received text messages from his dead wife, which contained things that sounded like something which she would say, but which listed no incoming phone number or email address. In a rather sinister twist, Jones had a brush with some sort of supernatural entity before, which had already chased away another family from the house. At the time, allegedly, his family's Blackpool home was plagued with all manner of paranormal phenomenon, such as furniture being moved or even flung around, the sound of disembodied footsteps, a myriad of banging and tapping noises, faucets being turned on, clothes torn off people, bed covers ripped off beds, and doors being slammed shut. The entity had been known as The Thing, and had led the family to have the house exorcised. 5 years later, the couple lost their 32-year-old son, Stephen, to a brain tumor, and just 3 months after that, Sadie died. Does any of the phantom phone activity or the deaths have anything to do with the malevolent entity known as The Thing? I wonder. An even earlier account of ghostly phone calls comes from 1969, when a New Jersey rock musician named Carl Uphoff claimed he was called by his grandmother, with whom he had been very close to and who had died 2 days earlier. The elderly woman had been deaf, but had always still called him on the phone or at his friend's house to ask if Carl was there, even though she couldn't hear the response, and much to the annoyance of his friends and bandmates. Carl claims that one night, in 1969, he received a call while hanging out with some friends. On the other end of the line, he says he unmistakably heard the voice of his grandmother. When he asked how she was able to call when she was dead, the woman hung up. Over the next several days, there would be numerous calls of this nature, and each time Carl asked her where she was or how she could call, the line would instantly go dead. This went on for some time until the calls suddenly stopped. Also from the late 1960s, comes the story of Seema Lieberman. At the time, she was in love with a man named Johnny, whom she had planned to marry. The two had moved in together, and things were like a dream come true. Then one night, Seema claims that she got a call at night from Johnny, but that the line was filled with static, and his voice sounded urgent and rushed. He allegedly told her, "I just want you to know that I love you, and I'll never be mean to anybody again." When she asked him what was wrong, Seema claims that the line simply went dead. She claims that she had tried to call him back numerous times, but was only met with a dial tone. 2 hours later, she received yet another call, this time from Johnny's mother, saying that he had been shot and killed the night before as he sat in his car. To this day, Seema insists that it was her dead lover reaching out to comfort her from beyond the grave. One of the most high-profile accounts of a call from the dead was made to none other than the best-selling author Dean Koontz, which he would later relate to author and biographer Catherine Ramsland. Koontz claimed that one day he received a call on his unlisted office phone, and that when he had picked it up, he could hear the voice of a woman who sounded as if she were very far away. Koontz explained that the woman spoke out with great urgency, giving the simple yet chilling statement of, "Please be careful." When Koontz asked who it was, the voice did not acknowledge him, but rather repeated the same warning 3 more times. As the voice started to fade into the distance, after which the line fell silent, leaving the author to sit there, pondering what he had just heard. Eerily, He would claim that the voice had sounded exactly like that of his mother, who had passed away 20 years earlier. He even went on and remarked, "It was such a strange call." 2 days later, Kuntz went to visit his father at a mental health facility where he was being treated for unspecified behavioral problems. Allegedly, when Kuntz entered the room, his father inexplicably lashed out at him with a small knife. The author was able to wrest the weapon away and claims that when he exited the room holding the knife, he was confronted by armed police officers who ordered him to drop it. Kuntz, who was still bewildered by the fact that his own father had just tried to kill him, tried to explain the situation but was warned that he was going to be shot if he did not comply. Finally, he did drop the knife, and the situation was resolved, but not without sticking in his head forever. Kuntz would later ponder whether the strange call he had received had been a warning from beyond the grave from his dead mother. Beyond just calls from the dead are spooky emails or text messages from beyond the grave. In 2011, 32-year-old Jack Froese passed away of a heart arrhythmia. Although this is tragic, the really strange part would begin 5 months later when Froese's good friend, Tim Hart, received a bizarre email one night, which had come from Froese's account and was listed as sent by him. The subject line contained simply the eerie message, "I'm watching." The rest of the email was no less bizarre. The email itself said, "Did you hear me? I'm at your house. Clean your effing attic." This was especially weird because just before Froese had died, Hart claimed that they had been up in the attic discussing what to do with all of the space up there. Hart was not the only one who had allegedly received messages from the dead man. Froese's cousin, Jim McGraw, got in an accident and broke his ankle. A week later, he claims that he got an email from Froese's account that allegedly read, "I knew you were going to break your ankle. Tried to warn you. You gotta be careful." The whole situation remains unexplained, and friends and family say that no one had Froese's password and that they don't believe the account was ever hacked. Just what was going on there, your guess is as good as mine. In April of 2011, a YouTuber uploaded a recording of a voicemail she received. Now, from the description, we learned that her grandfather died on December 23rd, 2010. The voicemail was received in March, and the user claims that her phone rang only once before the voicemail was recorded. What she heard on the voicemail was chilling. The white noise in the background is broken by the faint whisper of the word, "Grandpa." I want you to take a listen. Here it is.
Saved message. Saved message.
This next account came from a listener of ours who kindly emailed me the story. It says, "I worked as a telemarketer to earn a little money before fall quarter started for nursing school. A friend was a manager there and got the temporary position for me. I'd been working there for a couple of months. There was a dialogue on the monitor in front of us to read from while talking with people. The computer dials the number, so I had no say in who I call. I cannot remember the last name of the folks I called this one day, so I'll just use the name Smith. Anyways, the phone rang and a man answered the phone. I asked to speak to Mr. or Mrs. Smith, please. The man very nicely said, 'It depends on what you want.' So I went into my spew of mailers for donations for the particular charity that we were doing that day. Spew being the number of letters they would have to send and what to do with any money they should get back. I asked if I was speaking to Mr. Smith, and he answered with a chuckle, 'Yeah. And how much in postage will I have to pay? I'm on Social Security, and my wife and I have to watch our money pretty close.' I think the amount was like $3.40 in postage. As I was explaining the amount of money and options to mailing, a woman suddenly came on the phone call and says, 'Hello?' I said, 'Excuse me, I was just talking to Mr. Smith.' The woman said, 'Miss, I'm sorry. Mr. Smith has been gone for 3 years now. He passed away.' Well, shocked, I asked, is there someone else there I could have been just talking to? She said, no, honey, I'm here by myself. Can I help you with something? By her voice, I believed that she was being sincere. Stunned, I said, no, thank you, ma'am. You have a nice day. When the call was disconnected, I looked at the girl sitting beside me. She said, Terry, are you okay? I guess my face was pale, and I had a vacant stare on my face. I went out to a break right then and proceeded to tell my friend, who was also the manager of the floor. She went in and called the main office and asked them to pull my operator number calls for the day. I told her the name the next day she called, concerned someone may have been in the house with the woman, and she didn't know. She sounded elderly to me. The answering machine came on, and sure enough, she sounded like an elderly woman to my boss. Shelley left the number to our office and asked the woman to call back and reverse the charges. The woman called back a few hours later and said she was just fine. She recalled my phone conversation with her and thought that I was just some type of prankster. So, the question is, can spirits of the deceased somehow, some way, break through the unseen barrier, piercing through the veil between the living and the dead, to make contact with us through our modern devices? And if so, how do they do it? And why are only a few able to do this? I mean, if everyone who passed away could just call a loved one, then wouldn't everyone be getting these phantom phone calls? Wouldn't it be so commonplace for people to expect a phone call shortly after the death of a loved one? Yet, only a very small few actually report such a call or text from the grave. I wonder how many go unreported. Just how many people actually receive a strange call or text and simply dismiss it and move on with their life, and eventually over time, forget the whole thing completely. Perhaps pushing through the veil between these worlds is a demanding endeavor or a skill that only a few find they possess or have the willpower to accomplish. Perhaps it takes a lot out of the spirit. They have only a limited window of opportunity to attempt such a thing. Or maybe only those with an urgent, desperate need to reach through can punch past the membrane, separating them from the world of the living to make contact. Maybe it just simply doesn't work for all of them. If there is a spirit world at all, then we are far from understanding how it works. Nowadays, it seems that everyone has a smartphone and is always on it. Most of you listening to this show right now are doing so through a phone. The next time a person close to you passes on, pay close attention to your device. You may just get one more chance to speak with them. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Very bizarre, these phantom phone calls. You know, we did it. In fact, I remember doing actually an episode called like Duendes and Phantom Phone Calls and things. And I looked, that was all the way back in 2014. So I can't believe it was that long ago since we've discussed these things. So a couple of the stories that we told then I did not bring up on this show. But, you know, from time to time you hear about these stories where somebody receives a text message or an email or something, and it seems a little bit odd, seems a little off. And then it turns out that the person that sent it had already died. And you're like, wait a minute, something didn't happen. Somebody must have obviously hacked in and then used that phone or that email to send this to loved ones as, you know, like a troll. For whatever reason, somebody would try to do that. But a lot of these, there's no way that they could do that. Like, especially when it's the actual person talking to them on the other end of the phone. Like that one clip I paid for you where that guy's colleague called George Meek. I mean, is that real? They claim that it is. It sounds like somebody goofing around, like you could record your voice. I mean, I could record the voice and manipulate it. Something similar. Very easy to do. But I don't know if that's true. That's the problem when it comes to these bizarre cases, is no matter what proof we present here, there's not going to ever be 100% proof that that it's real or that it's someone, like I said, pranking somebody who's lost a loved one. But many of these cases, there's several books on it, and I've read some of them. There's several cases where not only does it sound like the person who's expired, but the people swear that they knew things that somebody else wouldn't know. Like if your spouse was to die, there's things that she could tell you or vice versa that only the two of you know. Mm-hmm. So it would be very hard for somebody to prank them. So that's what these cases where I'm like, man, I don't know how you explain that. There's also cases where I like where the girl called. She was a telemarketer. She called this lady's house and the man answered and she was explaining to him what he had to do. And he's like, well, how much is this going to cost and all this stuff? And then halfway through her spiel, a woman gets on the phone. It's like, hello, can I help you? And she's like, oh, yeah, sorry. I was just talking to your husband, Mr. Smith. She's like, no, Mr. Smith died 3 years ago. And she's like, no, I've just been having a conversation with him for like 10 minutes. So what is that? Unless that old lady and her old husband decided to prank telemarketers. I don't know.
Yeah.
Of course, there's always that possibility.
There is. You're right.
But that's a really good idea. I should start working out a script with me and my wife to do that.
Right? Yeah.
But I don't know, man. What do you think about the phantom phone calls, the phantom text messages, and the phantom emails that seem to be coming? You know, this is not a new phenomenon either. I mean, it's not like this just started happening in 1990 on upwards because of the invention of smartphones. These phantom phone calls have been going back since the earliest one I found was in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not a new thing. But it is bizarre that this even happens.
I guess the thing that gets me the most whenever we talk about any of these subjects of afterlife or ghosts or heck, any of this cryptozoology, any of this stuff, is we only have 5 senses. That's all we've got. Yours is already messed up. Mine's messed up. You don't hear properly as you get older. You don't see things right. You don't smell or, you know, taste things the same. Your touch, all that. That's it. That's your 5 senses. That's it. Sight, hearing, taste, smell, touch. That's what you got. I think that we are limited to a very, very minute thing in this world. And just because our very limited process of examination with those 5 things that aren't exactly the same. We're not running the exact same test. Your eyes and my eyes are completely different. I think going that way, we can't say for certain that these things don't happen. And so what I mean is, as far as the afterlife or as far as being able to talk after you're dead, maybe through this, we don't know, because maybe there's a frequency where they're talking to us now. I think back to that movie, I think it's called Heart and Souls, and it was with Iron Man, what's his name? Robert Downey Jr. was in that movie. I think this is right around the time he gets arrested for all of his coke madness, whenever he went crazy and got thrown in jail. But when he got as a little boy, he sees these spirits, and his family tells him that they're not real. And so he blocks them out, and then for the whole time in his life, he doesn't see them, but they're right beside him the whole time. It's one of those things. It goes back into us thinking about, like, when people talk about seeing the little people in the woods, almost like I got to peek through the veil, or maybe even like we talked about when people do psychedelic drugs, and right, it allows you to see. I think it expands on your senses. So us to say that there's no way this could happen, aside from the fact that somebody is, you know, trolling somebody or pranking you, I think, you know, I don't think anybody in their good consciousness can say that, because there's so many things that we don't have the ability to judge on our own. We have to go. I mean, like they talk about that one time, I think you actually did a news story, comes to mind, of a woman that could see all these other colors, all these other spectrums of colors. And then here you and I sit colorblind.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like she's seeing colors that aren't really there, you know, that we get, they're really there, but not to everybody else. So that goes into it. So anymore now, after doing this show as long as we've done it and talking to the people we've personally spoken to off air and the things that have happened to them, Look, I don't wholeheartedly go along with every story, but also you got to keep an open mind because you're like, we were very limited on our ability to examine anything.
Yeah, very, very strange. Before we get out of here, if you have any stories you'd like to share with the show, don't forget you can always email us, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can also call us, 817-945-3828, and you can leave your story in the voicemail. Please, if you do call, don't say, here's my phone number, call me so I can tell you my story. Just tell us the story. Yeah. That's the place to do it. You can either email it, and if you don't feel like typing it out, then you can tell it on the voicemail. But there's very slim chance that we're actually going to call you and discuss it.
Yeah, we got a lot going on.
Also, I've gotten several emails, and I got a voicemail on Skype recently where people are thinking of starting their own podcast, which I think is a great idea. And if you have any questions about how to do the podcast or have anything that's running, just email the show, man. I don't mind sharing that information.
Yeah, exactly.
I can tell you what I know and what I don't know. I don't know everything, but we figured out a way to do it. And if we can figure out a way to do it, then definitely you can.
Don't ask him what he doesn't know, because the list will be very, very long.
I thought something you don't know. I bet you if you went to the optometrist, they'd tell you you needed glasses,
I
too.
I know they would.
I bet you they would.
I know they would.
Because you don't know that you don't see, right, till yeah. you put on corrective lenses, and you're like, holy crap.
Yeah, it's going to happen. I've got to go. I know it's coming, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to put it off as long as I can. But
I would suggest
coming.
Doing that. Also, I'd like to thank our proud sponsors, Gaia.com. Thank you so much. Go check that out, people. There's a new series starting over there, Linda Moulton Howe and Truth Hunters. Excellent show. Go over to Gaia.com. Also, BlueApron.com. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to BlueApron.com/expanded. That's BlueApron.com/expanded. Cam?
Yes, sir.
What do you got planned for your week, bro? I know it's a busy one coming up, right?
Well, and it's with the weather. Actually, I've been dealing with work today. While we've been going there, I've been on the phone helping some guys troubleshoot some stuff. We've had some power outages that has affected some of our testing equipment. So I've had some guys going back and forth with that. So tomorrow, whenever y'all get this Monday, whenever y'all are listening to this, I will probably have stuff tore all to pieces while this is going on. So, yeah, I'm going to have a really, really busy one.
All right. Before we get out of here, I'd also like to remind everybody, if you like Expanded Perspectives and you're only listening to half the shows, don't forget about Expanded Perspectives Elite. You can go to our website, expandedperspectives.com, and sign up for Elite. It's $5 a month, and you'll get an additional show every Friday, as well as access to the entire back catalog. For you Elite members, we'll be speaking to you again on Friday. For everybody else, we'll talk to you next Monday. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.